You spend 20 years working with somebody, it's still fun to sit down and have a nice long conversation with them because you still find out there's stuff you never knew. Today I travel all the way to the office next to mine to talk to my good buddy and longtime co-worker, Editorial Director of Motorsport Marketing, Mr. David Wallens, on the Grassroots Motorsports Podcast, Episode 9. Hello once again everybody, JG Pastor Jack here from Grassroots Motorsports Magazine and Classic Motorsports Magazine, bringing you the latest edition of the Grassroots Motorsports and Classic Motorsports Podcast. A good buddy of mine is on the show today, Mr. David Wallens. I have worked next to him and alongside him for going on 20 years now. In fact, I think he is actually celebrating his 20th anniversary with our company this year. Which actually makes him the second longest employee behind yours truly, who is celebrating 24 years this year. But it's not a competition. I mean, if it was, I would win, but it's not. So that is what's going on this week. It's a long one, so I'm going to cut right to the chase here by saying that if you are not familiar with Grassroots Motorsports or Classic Motorsports magazines, now look, if you've been listening to the podcast, you probably are. But if you're not, we're going to offer you a great deal on subscribing. GrassrootsMotorsports.com/discount or ClassicMotorsports.net/discount. You're going to get like 20% off of a subscription if you would like to subscribe to either or both magazines. And if you're a current subscriber and want to renew your subscription, you will also get that same discount by going to those two websites and entering your information and re-upping your current subscription or getting a new one. If my voice sounds a little weird, it's because I am about 2 days away from having a root canal, and I've got a tooth going all funny on me. So between the swelling and the pain pills, I'm sure there's a little bit of slurring going on, but we're all friends here. We're all grown-ups. We know the score. All right, so what's going on this week? David Wallens is a guy who started out freelancing for us way back in the early 90s. He's somebody that I knew back when I was doing a lousy job at being the editor of this magazine before I found my true calling in the production department. But he was a young guy. I mean, young. He was my age. I think we're within a year of each other. And he was freelancing for us, doing a lot of event coverage around the Atlanta area where he had just finished college. And it was one of those things where it was a good relationship. He was very enthusiastic about the magazine, very easy to work with. And like most folks that end up working for us, it just kind of became his calling. So, you know, he came down and interviewed, and the rest is history. And honestly, you know, I think he is one of the most talented guys working in this business today. I mean, we work very well together. It's an honor and a privilege to work with him, and as well as being very, very fun. I mean, it's fun to go to work and do the stuff we get to do every day. It's a tough job. I mean, we put a lot of effort and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it. But at the end of the day, you know, it's really fun being an independent publication, beholden to no one but our readers and advertisers. And you know, it's a lot of fun to be able to do the stuff we do in a really, really cool, creative, fun environment. So I will stop yammering now, and I will cut right to my chat with my buddy, David Wallens. Enjoy. Recording this. What do you do here? So we're actually sitting down finally. With stop touching your mic too, because that's making a lot of noise.
Wait, let's start. Hold on. Let me cough at least. All right, I'm sorry. I won't do that again. All right, let's start over.
Okay, so we're actually sitting down with David Wallens, editorial director for Motorsport Marketing, on the podcast. Finally, what do you actually do here?
I'm still trying to figure that out. I, as my name suggests, I direct the editorial, which means I oversee both of our publications, Grassroots Motorsports and Classic Motorsports, and our websites.
Did you bring two lifesavers for yourself and none for me?
I always take two, yes. I always take two. As well as side projects, as some of you guys may or may not know, we do a little bit of extra special projects, World Challenge Guide, stuff like that. And those JG and I oversee and make them become reality.
So you're heading for 20 years pretty soon, aren't you?
Yes. I moved down here. It was spring break because that was the way I was able to talk my brother and our friend Paul into helping me move.
And moved into my old apartment.
And moved into your old apartment.
That's right.
It was, hey, you guys want to spend spring break in Daytona? And they were like, I guess so. I said, awesome. You get to drive this cool orange and white truck.
So let's back up further than that. So we'll talk about current stuff here in a minute, but let's let everybody know, you know, who you are and what's going on. So you're one of the few people actually here. We first met when you were still living in Atlanta.
Yes.
And you were living in Atlanta because you were actually trained as a journalist at the University of
Georgia.
Georgia Tech or Georgia State
University of Georgia.
University of Georgia, the Fighting Georgians.
Yes.
And so we met at an Atlanta autocross.
Yes.
When I was driving the Oldsmobile.
You were coming back in the Achieva from...
Harrisburg Pro?
Okay, that maybe? Could be it. Yep, I was going to say Ohio, but Pennsylvania is the same thing. And we had met via Facebook, and I think we Twittered to each other. No, this is before any of that. I was living in Atlanta. I had just graduated from University of Georgia. I was living in town. I was working for a company called AutoMod selling sports car and race car equipment, and that was basically like my grad school, the way I look back at it. I was freelancing for you guys for the magazine.
So this would have been 90, because it was before the Miata. So this was like 93, right?
Yeah, probably, because I graduated in 92, and I'd done some freelance stuff. You were coming into town, and I was like, hey, we have an autocross. It was one of our normal autocrosses, not a tour. This was at... the fairgrounds.
Like the Cobb County?
Lakewood Fairgrounds.
Right.
Awesome autocross site. I don't think they've run there in years. And I finally saw a concert there like a year ago. I'd never been there for a show. It's like I'm intimate with the parking lot. So that's where I met you the first time in real life. I think was there. I'd met Tim at the runoffs before that, but I don't think I met you there. I think I met Tim.
That's right, because runoffs was still in Atlanta at the time.
Right, yep. And I used to go there. Even when I was in school, I was going to the runoffs just to shoot photos. I had some photos appear in Grassroots Motorsports. I think I had some in Sports Car. And I was shooting for the Atlanta Region's publication as well a little bit.
So, and then what? It was, it was the next year that you came down. And remember, we went to some crappy Italian restaurant. How did that work out?
I was actually thinking about this the other night. It's weird, plate of shrimp moment. It was, because it's still closed, in the Trail Shopping Center by me. It's like, it was called like Tomcats or something. And it was like, it had outdoor seating. It's right by the liquor store. Was that an Italian?
It was something. I remember there was outdoor seating because Tim used to always want to sit outside because we're in Florida. And whenever we had a new employee try and interview, it was always like, look how great Florida is, come live here. And it's, you know, it's 1,000 degrees in a blacktop parking lot. Basically,
look at this wonderful view of this parking lot. And I remember him spitting a lemon pit during the interview, and of course typical Tim, he's like, you know, just closing it, like, so are you moving here or what? I guess let me break my lease. Okay, sure. And that was it. And soon after I came down, it was when we were doing Editor's Choice down at Moroso, the track now known as PBIR, and I think that's where, I don't remember if I was working then or if I came down for that. I think I may have come down for that, went back up, got my stuff, and then officially moved down here like 2 weeks later.
Yeah, I think that was your final dress rehearsal kind of thing.
Yeah, because I remember staying at your apartment, which eventually became my apartment, and that was fun. That's where Randy Popes was there, Gary Johnson, lots of people we still see. I just saw Randy at the 24 Hours and Gary at the 24 Hours. Rennie, who was also at the 24 Hours.
Gary brought a Neon, that like he was personally chaperoning the Neon around.
Which was the Neon ACR, which eventually became our project car when I first came down here. So I guess we had gotten it, I think, right after I moved down here or just right around then. And we had fun. We had fun there, a couple of cars had some issues.
But I think the only actually issues we had, and this was a big annual test we used to do called Editor's Choice, where we would get as many of the hot cars together as we could. And that was actually a really good year because we had new Corvette. I think LT1 Corvette had just come out. We had 3000 GT or Stealth or whatever it was. We had Supra Turbo.
Yeah,
we had like all these 300 horsepower cars. But I think the only issue we had was we had like a Mitsubishi Mirage.
And it lost a power steering belt.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
But on the way there.
Right. And it was awesome without the power steering. You're like, hey, this thing had too much power steering. I have too much assist. This is really nice. And that was fun. And I think it did rain. I don't remember. But yeah, that was my first welcome into this world. And I'm like, well, sure. I have a lease. I have a cool apartment. I live in Atlanta. But the whole reason I went to school was to do this. Actually, my major was magazines. That's how focused it was.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that part.
Yep, my major was magazines. It was part of the Henry W. Grady School of Journalism and Mass Communication, which is part of University of Georgia.
And you've actually gone back recently to contribute a little bit to the next generation.
I did. I went back up in for the petite. I found out, well, backing up, when I went to school, when we shot with something called film, we had to do a lot of assignments, obviously, and you'd have different assignments, you know, a fashion assignment, a news assignment, whatever, and obviously a lot of sports, especially Georgia being a big stick and ball school. And I would shoot car racing because I like car racing, and my teacher would look at them, and I'd usually get dinged a couple of points because
there were no bats in there.
Yeah. So the ironic part is, I'm like, but this photo got published in Grassroots Motorsports.
Paid for this.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm getting a B, and one of them in particular, I remember it was Bob Pastel, may he rest in peace, in his Peugeot 505 Turbo showroom stock car on two wheels, like in turn three, and I'm, you know, action, beautiful, everything, and I'm getting like a B, and it's like, but I made $20 on this photo. So anyway, fast forward, I found out recently, about a year or so ago, Mark Johnson, who's a photo teacher at University of Georgia, 180 degrees, check this out, he takes his photo students to Road Atlanta for the Petit Le Mans as a photo excursion, and they shoot photos.
So you're only 20 years ahead of your time.
Exactly. The track gives them one of the old garages, so they camp out there, and that's where they put their computers. ALMS was credentialing them with full photo vests, and I found out after the 2012 running, I'm like, oh my god, if I can help or do anything, and they said, sure, come up. So my wife and I went up, and not really knowing what to expect, but he said he always brings in some editors to help critique the photos. And we went up there, and the students were awesome. He had about a dozen students. I want to say like 8 or 9 girls. Like, no one there had ever been to a car race. So the first car race they're shooting is one of the most biggest, prestigious races in the country. So it's like they're totally getting thrown into the deep end of the pool. And the students were awesome. They'd go off. They'd shoot for about an hour and a half or so, come back. They'd pick out their favorite dozen or so photos. We go through and critique them, and not like, you know, oh, that's wrong, but, you know, you just photo critique, you discuss them, and then they'd go back out, and it was, honestly, it was awesome. I had no idea what to expect, and it's like, first off, for a teacher to be taking students and putting them in a real-world situation, but the fact it's part of our world.
Yeah. And part of you, too. I mean, it's got to be a little bit jealous. Look at it. I mean,
oh yeah,
these kids have better equipment than we do for the most part, and they just have access to, I'll just go check out this, you know, $4,000 L series Canon lens for the weekend.
That's exactly. Canon has a deal where all these students get to use basically the same equipment we're shooting with. They don't have image stabilization though, so haha. But when I was shooting, you had to use your own camera. So I had a Canon A1, and I had a 135 mm lens, so I was definitely sporting. But just the program is awesome. The track, or someone actually gives them a couple of golf carts, so they're mobile. Wow. And we would just work with them. I would take them around, took them to meet a few students. They got to meet Bruce Voss from Continental, Peter Calhoun from BF Goodrich, Charles Espenlab. They got to meet Charles Espenlab, who is like the greatest racer in the world, because he gave them a totally impromptu tour Q&A everything. It was awesome, and I need to write a column about it because it was so awesome.
And Dean Case, another former podcast victim.
Dean, yes.
PR for Mazda gave them a good rundown on what the PR teams look
yes,
for.
Yes, exactly. Because
photographer,
you always think photographer, oh, I'm going to sell to a publication. And Dean was like, hey, if you guys were shooting for, if you want to be shooting for someone like me, here's what I'm looking for. And what I'm looking for is different than what David's looking for. And here's how to tailor your pitch and what you deliver. And this was not even prepared because we didn't know what to expect. Long story short, I have a feeling I'll be back at Road Atlanta for this year's Petit Le Mans. And I'm totally looking forward to it. But it was nice. And it was also nice going back to the school. Like, yes, you could do it for another school, and it's cool. It was really cool giving back to the exact same program I went to. And even reading their cut lines, it's like, oh, that's the same way we wrote them. Like, it was neat just on a personal level. I think we're both also getting to the point where it's like you're trying to give back a little bit. And I figure this was a great way, and would like to get more involved with them.
So you're really about the only one of us that, well, Jane's got a journalism degree. Jane Solomon, our
I think Alan does too.
Our associate editors, but you've got the only actual magazine degree.
Yeah.
Here. So what's the biggest difference between what they were teaching you in your fancy Ivy League school and what how it actually works here?
Well, we don't use proportion reels as much as we were taught in school. I've always liked magazines. I'm actually, JG and I are in the, just so you can picture, Grassroots and Classic. We have this glass tower.
We're in the studio,
yeah. Which really is the break room / it's got this wall of magazines. And I'm looking, there's like Road and Track from like 1959 all the way up. We have Car and Drivers from 1961 and other magazines that are old. Auto Car going back to 61. Growing up, my dad was a car guy. In our basement, we had the big bookshelf in the basement full of his sports car graphics and Road and Tracks from, 60s, 70s, and 80s, I guess. I guess some were current. So I grew up, that's what I've always wanted was car magazines. So University of Georgia had a journalism program. I wanted to go to journalism school. Athens, Georgia is also a pretty sweet place to spend 4 years. In fact, several friends are still there, and I'm totally jealous. So majored in magazines. So it was very much how to deliver a product for magazines. They also had for broadcast news, I guess they had a newspaper. They probably had a PR. The biggest difference, all the good-looking kids were in the TV broadcast classes, and the magazine kids were like the normal people you'd hang out with. What I didn't realize, the magazine program was actually quite small. It didn't sink in until the day of graduation, where they actually had us by class, by subject, or by major, and there was like, I don't know, 12 of us. And I can still picture the expression on this girl, Amy, who was standing next to me, and she was also taken aback by how small the group was, and she's like, this is it? It's like, yeah, that's why, you're right. You know, I've been spending all these years always with the same 12 people. I never thought about it, because we didn't have a Facebook group for just our group. It was for the whole journalism program back then. So what we learned was a lot of news gathering, which is probably stuff I take for granted, but, how to write a news article, how to make it interesting. And then there's also stuff like communication law, which I had to study for, I don't remember, a semester or two. But we had to learn, if I see JG sitting on his porch in his bathrobe, I shoot a photo from the street, can I legally use it? And I don't remember what the answer is, but we had to be aware of that. And so there's other stuff. But it was a good – I mean, I guess it was good enough that I got out. I kind of knew what I was doing. But it was a lot of photography and really just how to make magazines. The sad thing is a lot of the stuff is no longer used. Like I was joking, we don't use proportion wheels. The internet did not exist. The web didn't exist.
And even more frustratingly, like not just that stuff didn't exist, but we didn't know that was going to exist. So we were I was in communication school at the same time and graphic arts and stuff, and we didn't even know this stuff was coming. I mean, actually, some of the students had a whiff that this was coming, but none of the professors did because they were kind of locked into to their patterns. Right. So we couldn't even get ready for it. We just had to respond to it when it finally happened.
And the whole digital publishing, we weren't using PageMaker and InDesign and stuff. We were using, you had the blue pencils and the red tape, and you had
the wax.
You had a waxer, and it took you, you know, an hour or two to do one page, and it was kind of boring, but that's all you could do. You had to run out the galleys of type, and then if there was a typo, and it was a total production. I hate to say it now. I mean, you turn out hundreds of pages a day, and so that, I kind of wish we had learned a little bit more of that. We knew digital photography was coming, even though we were shooting film. I remember when I was a senior in high school, my dad and I visited several schools, one of which was University of South Carolina, and the photo teacher showed us a digital camera. And I wish I could remember it better, but I think it was sort of like an SLR-style camera, and it had a small disc, like a picture, like a 2 or 1.25 inches or 1.5 inches floppy. And it's like, oh. And right then I'm like, ooh. And cell phones were brand new. And it's like, wow, one day, imagine I could be out shooting a photo at something, and then it's digital, and I can send it over the phone to the office, and they could then paste it up. That would be cool. And now fast forward, you know, here I'm holding my iPhone. I can shoot a photo of JG and show it to the world right now. So it's cool that, like, we knew it was coming, but we didn't know how to connect the dots. We knew we were getting to California. We just didn't know how we were going there.
And but what's cool though is like the biggest change, I think, and I mean, I think you started reading magazines and stuff before I did. I mean, I remember it was like the early 82-83 when I discovered like Car and Driver and Road and Track, and started reading like some of the old guys back then. Like, I call them old guys, but I mean guys like Brock Yates and Patrick Bedard and like these guys that were taking that writing and showing that you could do car stuff with personality and like have fun with it. But I mean, you even look back in some of these old auto cars, and I mean we come in here all the time, you get ideas. The ideas that were good in 1963 are still just as good today. It's just easier to put some of them together.
It is, yeah, and a lot of it is digital, just because the reality is, like, we just had the roar before the Rolex. Yuha was out there shooting photos. You were waiting to paste up the page that had like a guide, a Rolex guide. I think actually you have stopped by because Daytona is 15 minutes away or 10 minutes away and dropped off the photos. But really, he could have just emailed them to us, boom, dropped them in, go, done. We weren't doing that. Like when I first came here, we had the one CompuServe address.
Right.
And that was the whole company.
72123.2625 at CompuServe.com.
Right. That's how you could, I wonder where that goes to now. So
there's some nerd right now looking for that,
getting inundated. But it's interesting how we've changed. But you're right, the basics of delivering a story to your readers. One thing we always say is we don't print stereo instructions. Yes, it's entertainment. We want to inform, make it fun. We are our readers. And I think reading all those magazines, also I grew up on a steady diet of BMX magazines, which is my other passion. And that was always something like, yeah, there were the BMX guys, and they're in California, and we were on Long Island, which was a million miles away. There was some relationship, and they were like, we lived through those magazines. And I think that's part of it. We still get letters from readers. They look forward to the magazine, even though I know the internet, I hear, is a thing. And we have a huge presence on the web with both sites and our Facebooks and all that. People still like getting that magazine and sitting down and seeing what's going on in the scene, what's new and exciting. And that's fun to deliver.
One thing I loved about the BMX magazines, which was one of the things I loved about the good car magazines back then, was they created these personalities. I mean, like, BMX Action had Mike Buff and R.L. Mitchell.
Right.
Like, every month you got this magazine, like, wanted to see what those guys were doing.
Right.
Because even when they did boring stuff, it was cool.
Right. And I think sometimes we kind of think, well, no one wants to know what we're doing, but then people come visit us. You know, we moved into this building 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever, a certain number of years ago. We were always in office parks, which were kind of boring. We're now in a cool Art Deco building on US-1, and people come visit us, and they're like, yeah, we want to see what you're doing. And I'm like, I'm writing an article, or we're having a staff meeting or a production meeting. And you kind of, it's like the magic, like they're so excited, which is cool. And sometimes you get jaded, like, yeah, this is still really cool. I mean,
yeah, because so much of it is not sexy at all. I mean, for every Lamborghini we get to drive, there's 4,000 Hyundais. Nothing against the Hyundai Corporation, but I mean,
But I guess that's part of the fun. And again, it goes back to there is a passion in this world for magazines, whether it's Sports Illustrated, sports magazines, music, whatever. That is kind of your scene, what you're into. Yeah. If you're into golf, I joke, this was many years ago, whenever we switched paper for our magazine, our printer would send us samples. Like, oh, here, this is Pub Gloss number 3, and this is the trim size, and you can see, you know, so you can hold it. And years ago, they sent us a bunch of magazines, and it was like Animal Husbandry Weekly, Parking Lot Management.
Yeah.
And it's like, see, at least we're writing about Miatas and Honda CRXs. We're not writing about the latest yellow paint to go on the lines at the parking lot. So
I think we probably still have some around those Animal Husbandry. There was one for the cattle industry, which was awesome because the entire back half was basically personal ads for cows. Like, it was like a half page.
Cows need loving.
Like there'd be like a half page glamour shot of this bull with like this just big swinging piece of hardware between his legs, and it was like Big Stew. Yeah. He'll come and stud your whole thing. And it was basically like this hookup magazine for cows.
Well, cows need loving too. But I think what makes it fun is we're writing about Miatas and Subaru WRXs and Porsche 911s and stuff that our readers are into, and it is cool when they come to our events because they're so psyched, like, oh my god, I got to meet Randy Popes, and you slept on his floor, you know, and it's just,
he slept on my floor.
But it's just, and that's part of the fun too, and they know about these guys through the magazine and web and whatever, and that's also part of the fun, and that kind of feeds you when you're kind of like, I mean, we've been doing this for a million years. You do get a little tired and you want to take a break, but then you take a reader and he gets to meet Shane Lewis or someone, and so then that's the coolest thing, and Shane is so cool, and you're like, yeah, this is pretty cool. You know, I could be writing about like tables or wall paint or these cardboard boxes that are sitting next to me that are full of bank records. You know, so at least what we do, we get to write about a really cool product. And we do have pretty cool, you know, really cool readers who are into it and appreciate it. And they run our stickers on their car and wear our T-shirts, which is very humbling. It's like, wow, you actually put a sticker for our magazine on your car to show the world that you like us. Damn, that's humbling. I don't know what to say. You know,
that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, you get jaded going to work every day after a while. It's like oh, you know, I'm just paying the mortgage for this.
Right.
There's like guys out there like buying hats.
Right.
I get free hats, you know, as part of my deal. But it's like, oh, I'll give you money for that hat. It's still weird walking into a bookstore and seeing us on the shelf and knowing, like, if I grabbed one of those and walked out in the parking lot, I could technically get in trouble.
Yeah, that's weird. Also, my parents are still involved with cars, especially BMW Club stuff. And they'll have a garage tour or something, and my mom will send me a note, like, oh, we went somewhere and they had your sticker on their car at their house, and you know, which obviously makes them feel good and helps justify going to college and all that stuff and having a job that, you know, I'm not a doctor or a lawyer, but it is cool. In fact, I just got an email from our friend Judy at Paul Reed Smith Guitars. She visited a friend, and there's a stack of Grassroots in the guy's house, and she took a photo, and it's like, you know, it's probably, I don't know, 3 years worth of Grassroots Motorsports sitting at the guy's house, and it's like, well, that's pretty cool that someone, you know, one that collects it, two, thought it was cool, sent you the photo, and it is pretty cool. So.
All right, so let's cut to real time.
Okay.
One of the cool things that we actually do get to do is go to some of these press intros.
Yes.
And you know, a lot of guys are still very well. Full disclosure, you know, so and so flew me here and put me up in a hotel. You know, I work my ass off. I am not ashamed to say that yes, every once in a while somebody treats us nice and takes us somewhere to show us something, because they're showing us a product that we then get to show to our readers.
Right.
And you know what? If they buy me dinner, well, good, because I was up till 3 o'clock the other night, you know, putting something together. So I am not ashamed about that at all. But both of us actually were on trips for BMW in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I went and saw, actually, and then Tim went and drove the Street 2 Series. the M235i. I went and drove the race version.
Yep.
And we actually have a podcast coming up with the manager of BMW Motorsports and one of their PR guys coming
That'll be pretty awesome.
I say that's coming up, assuming that we're going to put this one on before that one.
But oh, yeah, it's true.
You may have already heard a podcast with the manager of BMW Motorsports. And then you went to the 51st state, Puerto Rico,
and drove
the new Mini.
I did. It was the international introduction, which I've been on a couple of these, including for the original, not the original from the 50s, but the first modern Cooper S.
The first all-caps Mini.
Yeah, that's the best way of putting it, the first all-caps Mini. So, yes, went to Puerto Rico, got back Friday, so I guess today's Monday. The viewers don't know that, but, yes, I just got back.
So you're still on island time.
I am still on Puerto Rican time, so I'm a little jet-lagged, which is why I'm fading a little bit. But, yeah, so we went down, and it was to drive the new Mini Cooper and Cooper S hardtop, so no convertibles or the two-seater. And it was cool. The Mini is a car. I was actually thinking back. We did, four or five at least Mini project cars, over the last 10 years. So it was cool to drive this one. It's, if you see one going down the road, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that's a Mini. It's obvious that it's a Mini. But once you get in it, it's like, all right, it's different. It felt a little bit more solid. It's got the three-cylinder engine on the regular Coopers, a three-cylinder turbo, which at first you're like, oh, three-cylinder, that's going to be boring.
So that's the base engine?
That's the base engine.
Turbo. So that's the thing now, basically, is going with small displacement and turbo.
Yeah.
And that's just what's
Although it's not too small. It's like a – I should know all this. I want to say it's a 1.5 liter. I'm probably going to get that wrong and get a ton of mail. What was interesting, though, is they had the 0 to 60 time, which in England they call not 60.
Or not 100.
Not 100.
Because they use the metric system.
It's true, maybe. This one, for the regular Cooper, their published time is something like 7.4 seconds. And I'm thinking, my original 1992 Sentra SCR had the same posted 0 to 60 time, and that was such an awesome, amazingly fast car that they'll never duplicate, and now a base Cooper can run it down
and get 40 miles a gallon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, direct injection and all that. So yeah, that's what we did. We'll have something on the web. We should probably
I lost you.
Uh-oh.
I think you pulled some. Oh, yeah. Hit that mute button.
All right. Shoot, it bumped.
You're back. Yeah, David accidentally muted himself.
I went on the tirade.
Start from University of Georgia. That's where we.
Really?
No.
Oh, I was gonna say JG asked me about the Mini, and I just went off on this thing with every four-letter word. No, the car was. I don't even want to hear about the car. It was really nice, and I've seen some complaining. It's a little bit bigger than the old Mini. And it probably is a little bit bigger, but it's not like the size of an Excursion or anything. It goes down the road nicely. Puerto Rico's roads sometimes are a little bumpy in places, and it did really well. It felt good. I would say of the two, the Cooper probably surprised me the most. The Cooper used to be like either you're on a budget or you were trying to run for HDOC points, and it's like, I think I would drive this every day and be happy.
How much?
Starts around 19.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And it's more than some other small cars, but boy, it's nice, and it does come nicely equipped.
And then what's the S now?
I should know this. Low 20s. I was just pricing one out earlier today. I was kind of curious myself.
What's the S powered by?
I don't know. It's got a turbo, twin charged. Not quite 200, a lot of horsepower. It didn't feel, the supercharged Cooper S was pretty quick. The turbo Cooper S almost felt too quick. This one doesn't feel, I know the numbers are there, but it's almost like manageable. Okay. Like you don't feel like you're going to just die, and you don't go, oh, this car would be great if it was rear wheel drive, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But they look nice, and I will say it was a pleasant surprise. You're always going into these things like, okay, did they screw it up? How is this going to go? And yeah, it is full disclosure, they flew us there, but you get there and you're like, this thing is pretty awesome.
Yeah, you're still there doing a job.
Right. Yeah, this thing is pretty awesome. So I was happy. So I think we'll be doing a little bit more with them, and would actually like to hear what the reader feedback is on these cars. If it's, you know, are you lining up to buy one or not?
Yeah, because that, I mean, that's one of the cars that absolutely defines our market. I mean, they're Mini's constant. Since it came out, I think it basically has been one of the top five reader cars in our survey every year.
Well, I think they were just saying they just had like one of their best years ever. So it's interesting that the car is no longer new, but it still continues to sell very well. Resale historically has been like very good, and it's a compact car. Compact cars are supposed to be worth nothing after 2 years, and they're doing really well. So it's interesting. I remember when the first one came out, you were there too. We're like, is this going to work, or is this kind of a gimmick? Like, is this going to be like, oh yeah, it's really cute, and then it's going to just fall, and we'll all go back to driving Civics?
But then, I mean, we've known people that have bought Minis and basically traded them in on new Minis, and like never been upside down on them, which is amazing for a German car. It's pretty amazing because you figure, I mean, there's going to be some maintenance, and I'm sure if you got a car that had some maintenance issues, it'd be pretty easy to get upside down quick. But not a lot of those out there, and it seemed, you know, and.
I mean, they've had some problems, but boy, the resale is just like rock solid. Where it should have all these strikes against it, and it looks cool. What I also like is it's a small, let's call it relatively inexpensive car, that has some personality. So it's nice that like I was talking to a friend of mine, and she's like, "Oh, my sister has a Mini," and that's what I like to hear. I like to see people who you don't think of as car people. Maybe this makes them car people. They get a Mini or a Miata or something that, you know, all right, if you buy a Corvette or a 911, usually you're a car person already, you would say. But it's cool to see people buying these other cars that are not premium priced, and it sucks them into our world. And it's like, all right, how do we get you to a race now?
Yeah, you buy it because it's cute, and you find out you like it because it has some personality.
Right, and it's not like driving driving a toaster, not meaning the Scions. I'm just picturing that's the first appliance I could think of. Because actually, there's our toaster over there pointing at it in this room. So, and that's another thing I like, and hopefully that is soon you'll be hearing about. Mini has a driving school that we've been invited to check out.
Oh, very cool.
And again, what I'd like to see, it's cool to see making an enthusiast become more of an enthusiast, but I really like taking a normal person and watching them get into our world and start asking about autocross and stuff.
And BMW as a company gets it. They are good at that. One thing I learned, and I won't give too much away, is my BMW Guy podcast, but they're a manufacturer that actually has a guy who works for the manufacturer who is their company liaison to the BMW Club of America.
Yep. And Porsche Club does the same thing. And it's like, how obvious that everybody should be doing that, because if you want to sell a group of people your newest wares, if you go to the club that they are passionate about it, I would think you'd have a pretty good success rate. So you're right, and it's cool seeing some of these manufacturers get it and want to make more people into their cars.
Cool. All right, we're up to about 35 minutes here, cool. So there's tons of stuff we could talk about, but your office is right next to mine, so you'll be in this chair again, and now you know how the headphones work.
The headphones are pretty good. I may wear these while driving home, just to. It'd be funny if I rode the bus. I'd wear these. These are pretty good. Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you to our readers, and our listeners, and our viewers, and our peeps, and. I'm trying to think what we have coming up.
Give us a tease of the June issue of Grassroots, because we have to do a cover for that soon.
All right. I see. Here's the bad thing about working for a magazine. I never know what month it is. Fortunately, I do remember my parents' anniversary is coming up soon, and I will not mess that up.
People ask me all the time about, do you remember that issue that you guys... No. Well, once an issue's done, I'm proud of what I do, but I have no recollection of any of it anymore.
The joke is JG, they'll be like, oh, yeah, remember that article we did like 2 years ago on that guy with the blue Camaro?
And it was 16 years ago,
exactly. So, all right, coming up, it's going to be collector cars for our generation, right? Because you always look back, you know, if you watch any of the auctions, you see these Shelbys and all these cars selling for $1 million. And then it's like, oh, my dad had one and he sold it for $2,500. Oh, my uncle had a, you know, he owned one of the only Cobra Daytona coupes and he sold it for, you know, a guitar. And we've done this before, but things change. And it's interesting to look at what cars from our world are destined to go there.
And it's just as interesting to see the stuff that we've picked before that right. maybe is not like the E30 M3 went from like being right. being on our list of the next hot thing and like being able to like buy these while they're $12,000 while you still can. Yeah. And then Tim just sold his a couple months ago, a salvage title car for $26,000.
Right. Those that like yeah, you missed that one. So what's the next one? It's like trying to, you know, you missed buying Apple or Microsoft stock. What's the next thing? And they're just kind of fun because you get the daydream. Because right now, if we ask any reader, pick the 10 cars that are going to be the next collectibles, they'll quickly spat out a list, and no list will be the same. And you can tell the guy who's into GLH on these, his list is going to be different than the Alpha guy or whatever. We have that. We have another thing we're working on. We asked a group of our professional racer friends, name your most fun racetrack. And we did an epic racetrack thing a while ago, and this is different. This is fun. These are maybe not the tracks that will scare you, but just where do you want to spend a day? And then as the little PS is, all right, what would you change at each track? And I don't want to name any tracks, but some of the people who helped us, like Andy Lally, who's been everywhere, Brock Yates Jr. from One Lap, Tire Rack One Lap of America was one of our expert polls. Will Nonamaker, who we've worked with forever at Team Saline. And it was cool because the list of tracks, a few I kind of figured would be on there, but some of them totally out of left field, and that makes it fun.
And there's some great potential on that list because there's so many good tracks out there that maybe like they don't have a pro event that comes to
exactly.
them, so they're not real high profile, or exactly. they happen to be in a town that's like doesn't really have the hotel structure to get big events there, or they're right. noted, you know, like they're, you know, quote unquote club tracks or something.
Exactly.
And there's some great tracks on that list. That
like I'm not sure if it's on the list. I'm not saying it is, but we have Roebling Road, 3 hours north of us. They cannot hold spectator events, so it's a club track. It is a fun. I still have never gotten right. It's a fast track. I mean, you're fourth gear going through some of these turns, but if you don't live in the Southeast, you probably have never heard of Roebling. Right. You know, if you happen to live, you know, you live in California, you've never heard of it. Like Hallett is another track that, you know, Hallett's not on, you know, IMSA's not going there this year, but it's a really fun track in Oklahoma. So that was kind of what it was, is some of these cool tracks that are out there that you may not have heard of, but boy, they're fun. And that's really why we kind of do all this silly stuff.
Palm Coast International Raceway.
Coast International Raceway, which is semi-retired, and we'll do a separate podcast on that.
This will be on foreshadowing. The history up there, yes.
Because actually, I told the Palm Coast International story this weekend, and we'll do that one again later with a podcast. We have Classic Motorsports, obviously, is coming up, which is about. It's got a bunch of stories on cars. What we're sending an issue to bed pretty soon.
Restoration mistakes to avoid. And
it also has Peter Brock's part two on the Cobra Daytona Coupe. And that's a story. It's like, oh, I know about the Cobra Daytona Coupe. They made 500 of them, and they won every race. And it's like, well, we did the real story a year or two ago with him. And then this is the PS. This is what was supposed to happen, but the GT40 came along, and Ford said, no, we're racing GT40s. And Shelby American had already started going down this path to develop a second-gen Cobra Daytona Coupe, and there's like they made one of them. And it's a coulda, woulda, shoulda. Like, oh, this could have been. Yes, the GT40 was an amazing success, and this is, well, what if there wasn't the GT40? Is this what we would have had as HO slot cars as kids, not GT40s? And it, you know, it looks like a Daytona Coupe, but it's a little bit different, and so we have some cool stuff. Ben's project is continuing. And I should talk about the Capri real quick. We have a story.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome. That one stuck cool? by me. I was busy pooping out my insides norovirus while that one got laid out.
Real quick, there's this car show in Mead Gardens, which is in Winter Park, Orlando, Florida. I go every year. JG teases me because I shoot a ton of photos there, and it's this beautiful, shady park. And he goes, ah, more photos for the from the Enchanted Forest. So if you look through our magazine, like if I need a generic photo of a British car, it may have been shot there. Anyway, this guy shows up. This is a few years ago. He had a Ford Consul Capri, like a 61-62, which, you know, it's a little, like a, you know, it was a small car by our standards, but it had total American styling. And then he did it in a very light metal flake with these four-spoke Krager wheels. And it looks like, picture, a 62
a tiny hot rod, yeah.
Yeah, and it just looked awesome. And the dude who owned it looked like the guy who should be driving the car. I mean, just the whole package. And it's like, oh, we got to do your story. And it took a little while. John Weber did the story. It's awesome. The photography in front of the record store, it's like the whole thing comes together. And I'm glad because even when, as soon as I met the dude, it's like, oh, you are the guy who should be driving this cool, hot, roddy, obscure British car. Like, you know, we meet a lot of cool people and see a lot of cool cars, and this is the one where it's like, oh, yeah, you look like your dog. Like, and it worked out. So that's a cool story, and hopefully people like reading it.
Cool. All right. We will see you again. I mean, I'll see you again because your office is right next to mine.
We're
going to
walk out together,
yes.
I assume, yeah.
So that's it, David Wallins. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time you're on.
Cool. Thank you very much.
So there is my conversation with David. I hope I didn't ramble too much for you. I hope there wasn't too many inside jokes. One of the great things about working with the crew that I do is we're going to have a lot of them on the podcast on a pretty regular basis. So there was actually a couple of stories that we alluded to that we will get to at a later date. And you know, after 2 decades in the same company and doing the same stuff, there's some interesting stories to share. We take it for granted sometimes because we just get used to it, but there's some fun stories there. Once again, if you are enjoying these podcasts, you can do us the huge favor of spreading the word. Please direct your friends to grassrootsmotorsports.com or classicmotorsports.net and share with them all of the cool stuff we have to offer. Really, one of the best sources for us for new subscribers is word of mouth. I mean, we have a very, very dedicated fan base out there and a very, very dedicated reader base. So you guys are really our best advertising when it comes to spreading the word. So, you know, share it with a friend. If you got somebody who's thinking about getting into autocrossing or sports car racing or track days or whatever, you know, point them our way. Throw us a bone once in a while. We appreciate it. All right, once again, if you would like a discount on your renewal or on purchasing a new subscription to either of our fine magazines, grassrootsmotorsports.com/discount or classicmotorsports.net/discount. We get you a roughly 20% discount, which is pretty fair money in these rough economic times of ours. All right, folks, this was a long one, so that's it for this week. Please tune in every Tuesday, and you can hear the newest edition of the Grassroots Motorsports and Classic Motorsports podcast. And we will see you next time. I am JG Pasterjack. Thank you very much for listening. Have a lovely day.